Welcome back to Boston Public Radio, Jim Brady and Marjorie Egan. When it comes to the survival of the fittest, businesses know they need to evolve, sort of like the president of the United States did on gay rights. No industry wants to be on the wrong side of history or their customers. And in the 21st century, that includes supporting the LGBT community. Here with us in Studio 3 to take stock of where corporate America is on the spectrum of that evolution is Harvard historian Nancy Kane. Nancy is an historian at the Harvard Business School, where she holds the James E. Robeson Chair of Business Administration. Her latest book is Ernest Shackleton, Exploring Leadership. Hi, Nancy.
Hello, Nancy. So, Nancy, there was this great piece in the New Yorker that talked about, written by this guy that was working for Bill Clinton 20 years ago, and he talked about how he was having a lot of trouble getting CEOs on board with Clinton's beginning of those gay rights initiatives. And he said he was thinking about that when he looked at the employer amicus brief filings on the Supreme Court decision on gay marriage. And he counted up 379 major businesses and business organizations were on board with gay marriage in that short period of time. Evolution of LGBT rights. So is this legit, this corporate evolution, and is it good for business or good for humanity? What's the deal?
I think it is legit. I'm struck as a historian by the rapidity of this, by how quickly this has happened. So, you know, the reporter that, or the writer that that Marjorie's talking about is Richard Socarides, S-O-C-A-R-I-D-E-S. It's a story, Corporate America's Evolution on LGBTH Rights, from April 27th of this year, dear listeners. And he talking about this, you know, this is less than 20 years ago. And then, and when, you know, there was the companies that were willing in any way to come into the public policy arena and embrace, you know, same-sex marriage in any way, shape, or form, or even say they tolerate it, were few and far between. And now we have, you know, in this legal context, but in other stages as well. Think about different companies' reactions to Mike Pence's law in Indiana, right? Companies scurrying over, you know, kind of tripping over themselves to say, "Well, we may not do business there because we support same-sex marriage." I can't think of any other social issue where business, now exerting its force, as we've talked about many times in this program, as a social actor as well as a commercial actor, has so quickly become, you know, out in front is too strong, but so quickly at least been willing to step out onto the stage and say something about this, and say something in the sense of equality or a progressive tone about this. I'm struck by the rapidity. I do think it's rapid. I do think it's real, and I do think there are really important business rationales behind this as well as social.
See, I don't know, have any of the data that you have, but I think the business rationale is the key. By the way, I don't really care what their motivation is. My attitude is if they do the right thing, if it helps, that's fine. However, there's a wonderful piece. You mentioned Pence, the governor of Indiana, and there's a wonderful piece that says a huge number of the CEOs who condemned this law in Indiana, which caused Pence to retreat, gave hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars to Pence's campaign when he was beating up and campaigning against all these LGBT causes. And the highest profile example they pick is the guy who's the CEO of Angie's List, who gave $150,000 to Pence as a candidate at the same time that he and his company are amongst the leaders. So is it that clear that again, having said that, I don't care what the motivation is. Do we really know what the motivation is in most of these cases, or are we just assuming that it's a good business thing and some of these have high moral standards too?
So just to take your example, which is an important one, from, and the dear listeners, this is from a Salon article not so long ago, Corporate America's Equal Rights Farce, the truth behind its Indiana opposition. Now, this writer, David Sirota, gives two examples, Eli Lilly and the CEO of Angie's List, as having contributed to Pence's 2012 campaign. So I don't see this as necessarily a massive hypocrisy. I think it's all about business. So they're placing their wagers. We don't know whether they gave to Democratic contenders for the same election, which lots of companies do. He has not come as far out in 2012 as this, the forgive me, I'm going to get it wrong, Religious Freedom Reformation Act.
I think that's what it was called, but we all know what it was.
Right.
Yeah.
So he's not come as far out in 2012. And I think what happened is for Eli Lilly and for Angie's List, oh, this is too hot to handle. This is not good business. All of this is in the interest of good business, I think, Jim. We're on the same page on this. And how can it be good business? Well, good business because you have a lot of talent. A lot of folks in the workforce, whether they're out or not, who are either lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual, or very supportive of LGBT rights, and you have a lot of customers, suppliers that are critical to your business that are equally supportive, and so it's just not something you actually want to be on the retrograde side of.
You're probably right, but my cynicism is born not of that article, but when I read that one of the CEOs who was very high profile, and this was one of my least favorite CEOs, that being Lloyd Blankfein of Goldman Sachs. Here he is in this YouTube thing coming out in support of gay marriage equality back in 2012. Here he is.
I'm Lloyd Blankfein, Chairman and CEO of Goldman Sachs, and I support marriage equality. America's corporations learned long ago that equality is just good business and is the right thing to do.
See, my attitude is if Lloyd Blankfein likes it, I have to worry about it. In any case, but maybe it's heartfelt. Who knows?
I think you can be dubious about the larger public footprint of Goldman Sachs. There's lots of good reasons to be dubious about their, you know, its public citizenship on lots of different counts. I think he's, you know, that he came out after with great thought and great strategic planning. And this was, I am sure, also about burnishing Goldman Sachs's image. And P.S., remember the tribe of silverback gorillas that is the big bank. There are the big banks and the other big financial institutions in Wall Street. There is a lot of support among that tribe, right, anecdotal and quantitative for LGBTH rights. So, yes, he's coming out, but yes, he's saying something that a lot of people in the tribe want to hear. And P.S., Goldman Sachs can use all the silver polish, right, on its tarnished image that it can take. And this is a piece of that, too. And he does – you said you don't care about motivation. He does some good doing this.
I totally –
all kinds of financial institutions and other people that think very, very highly of his success as a leader of that institution. So what I think, again, is so interesting is 20 years ago, who would have said, sitting around Boston Public Radio, all your predecessors, right? We would have said, hey, do you think in 2014, 2015, we'll all be talking about the public image race to the finish to embrace lesbian gay rights? We all would have said, what are you smoking?
Exactly.
We
would have absolutely said that. And, you know, this piece talks about Wall Street, but it also talks about this kind of turnaround at Walmart, which is, you know, America's biggest retailer, you know, a place where in 2008, the New Yorker's reporting the company had these gay-friendly policies, but the CEO at the time still felt it was acceptable to sign on a petition to ban gay adoption in Arkansas, which passed but was later struck down. Then 5 years later, they do this dramatic turnaround where they're like totally gay friendly. And you got this other CEO talking about, quote, every day in our stores, we see firsthand the benefits diversity and inclusion have on our associates, customers, and communities we serve, the giving health benefits to same-sex couples and the whole nine yards. So that's another dramatic turnaround.
Could not agree more. I mean, I remember reading the day this came out in reaction to the Indiana law and Mike Pence trying to defend it, and I just my jaw dropped, you know, standing there over the New York Times, because this, again, Walmart, like Goldman Sachs, like a bunch of other companies, there's a whole another right litany of companies that are in a different category that are progressive, that are path breaking around social legislation and social posture, but I would not put Walmart or Goldman Sachs in those categories. And here we are now. Hey. You know, again, this is the CEO, Doug McMillon of Walmart, coming out in front and saying, we know diversity is a great asset to our business. Well, I'm glad he said that. And I think that again, back to whether regardless of the full gamut of motivations, it's a good thing for Walmart to come out and say they're a huge employer. I believe
they're the biggest
private employer in the United States.
You know, one of the critical issues, not critical, one of the interesting issues to me with all this kind of thing, any socially responsible behavior by corporate America is, are they leaders or followers? And my natural inclination is always to say they're followers. But since you're both talking about Walmart, it's pretty clear that when Arkansas tried to pull in Indiana, the thing that caused the Arkansas governor to back off this anti-gay thing was because of Walmart. And I would assume, I know this may betray an anti-Southern whatever, so my apologies, but I'm guessing that the numbers on gay rights and gay marriage in Arkansas are not nearly as high as they are in much of the North. So one could argue in that case that Walmart became a leader in a state that probably isn't wildly gay friendly. I think it's a fair statement, no?
A fair statement. And I think you're right to point to, you know, I mean, we could argue for a lot about which is the chicken and which is the egg here, but clearly business, even if they're initially reacting, some of these companies are actually then, you know, in turn exerting their own influence. Think about what happened in Arizona. I believe it was last year. Was it Governor Jan Brewer?
Yeah.
Right, and different sports organizations and other businesses. You know, when Arizona was considering something like this, said, "Oh no, you do this, and you're not going to see a Super Bowl for a long time." And guess what? That was very effective. That did not happen.
By the way,
in Arizona,
not only did very conservative Governor Jan Brewer take the position she did, a lot of legislators who had supported the legislation ultimately voted against the legislation, in great part because business matters.
So again, from a historical standpoint, just for a second, deep yoga breath. Isn't it interesting? Two things. One, that gay rights, same-sex marriage, has become a kind of silver cup or brass ring for corporate America to try and grab for, whatever the motivations. And two, isn't it interesting that is now playing a big role? This isn't about tax breaks. It's not about, you know, extra kind of, you know, revenues for building here or some kind of traditional lobbying. It's a different kind of benefit they see, indirect and perhaps direct to their image, that is now playing itself out on what a lot of folks would call a very, at least one, very progressive stage or playing field. That's interesting.
But Nancy came from Harvard Business School. Just trying to be clear, is this because they know that the so-called gay lobby is powerful and a lot of money could be brought against their corporations, or because their brother-in-law just came out of the closet, or, you know.
Or because American popular position on this is changing pretty dramatically, no?
I mean, you know, maybe it's a little bit like the minimum wage, right? There's something where, like, it's just clear that American popular opinion is shifting very significantly. So I'm driving here today and I'm thinking, why haven't we seen the rapidity of embrace around, say, women in power in corporate America, right? Where only 5% of the Fortune 500, 48 of a whatever Fortune 1000 are headed by women, and ditto for African Americans at the top of companies. And why haven't those groups had the same kind of overt, rapid embrace on the political stage? You know, we're still arguing about all kinds of stuff in policy circles that are issues that those groups want to see enacted. So I'm not sure what the answer is, but it surely has something.
I have a theory.
Surely has some a lot to do with what you're saying about who are the popular opinion. Who are the people in lots of circles of power that embrace this? And P.S. Many of them are lesbian, gay, bi, transsexual. So I think that that's a piece of it as well. And I think there's something about this issue that is safer for business. Forgive me, than some other issues.
Yeah,
that they could embrace socially.
Well, my theory is,
and that's not to take anything away from the difficulty of social activists in this regard.
Yeah, my theory has to do with that. It excludes lesbians because, of course, lesbians are women, but gay men may be gay, but they're still men, and most of them are white, and they're smart, and they're powerful, and they have a lot of money. So that's.
I don't think we can ignore that, Marjorie. Not a whit.
You know,
I think you're right.
Two things. One, a little factual thing, which I was unaware of. Probably you were. I was trying to, when Marjorie and I were talking about this morning in anticipation of coming, we're thinking, who are the trailblazers? And I guess not surprisingly, the first major corporation, 1986, Apple, allows the formation or encourages the formation of a gay employee group. 96, IBM, which I guess is a little more surprising to me. I didn't know about this, provides health benefits to same-sex couples, obviously when gay marriage was still illegal everywhere. So that's part of the history. But if it turns out that there's at least some piece of this that is real, as opposed to, or heartfelt, as opposed, you know, there's support for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people and causes. What percentage of the CEOs of these major companies are LGBT or any?
So Tim Cook, I think we talked about that a year ago when he came
out.
Head of
Apple.
It was about a year ago that he
forgot about
came
him,
out,
yep.
And I think that was heartfelt. He came out, the statement was elegant and short and very, very sincere. And, you know, basically he said, I don't want to be known primarily as a gay man, but I think being gay has been one of the best things that ever happened
to
me.
That's huge. You're right. I forgot about him.
And he did it with dignity and bravery. And Apple is one of the most respected companies financially, strategically, by consumers in the world. That was a huge
deal. Is he an outlier or are there others?
Well, it's interesting. I did, went around kind of, if you will, you know, rooting round, as we say in England, rooting round for other publicly acknowledged gay or lesbian, bisexual, transgendered CEOs. There aren't any other public CEOs that I could find. That doesn't mean they're not there and out, but I haven't found them. So he's standing there. And we have athletes now beginning to come out. Right, first round draft picks, other athletes beginning to come out. When, you know, I remember LeBron James saying, you know, a decade ago, I wouldn't trust a gay man, wouldn't trust a gay man to be on my team. So again, the world has really shifted very dramatically, and I'm struck by that, and how important a footprint or how important an impact businesses shift here really is. It's a big deal. I think I will also say just lastly that I remember. A year and a half ago, I guess it was 2 years ago because we're in the middle of proxy season, when it was 2012, Starbucks had made an announcement that they were fully supportive of same-sex marriage. And they wanted to do everything that they could do institutionally and in terms of benefits and whatnot to support same-sex marriage. And I was at the annual meeting that year and a shareholder stood up and said, this has hurt your stock. You know, there's a mandatory Q&A period to Howard Schultz. And he said, with all due respect, sir, if you really believe that, and he went on to talk about the stock's increase over the last year, he said, you should sell your stock because we are 180,000 employees and we are a diverse group and we support diversity wholeheartedly. And he got a huge round of applause. And at the time, that was considered – this was only 2 years ago, considered a little bit iconoclastic, a little bit perhaps like, why are you bringing this stuff into an annual meeting, Howard? Now, right in the wake of what we're seeing, it actually starts to look like, if not quite standard operating procedure, a lot less strange, or he becomes a lot less of an outlier. So, you know, again, the speed here, I'll stop saying that, but it is striking.
Yeah, speaking of speed, we should just say that tomorrow Margaret Marshall is going to be with us.
Right.
Margaret Marshall, who obviously wrote the decision in the Goodrich case in late 2003, it started all this. Who, by the way, sat in on the Supreme Court argument last week. She'll be joining us. I'm sorry, Margaret.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you mentioned LeBron James and the draft picks and so forth, because the sports world has been huge about this too. You know, where there's a place that's going to discriminate against gays and lesbians, then the brouhaha begins from another unlikely place, you know, the epicenter of the so-called macho man, right?
Right, and it's interesting because it coexists in certain sports organizations with domestic violence. And remember the NFL and players like hitting their wives or hitting their girlfriends? So it's
sort
interesting.
Sort of like Floyd Mayweather hits all of his former girlfriends and the mothers of his children. Well, boxing
I mean,
is.
You could argue that who are we looking out for and under what conditions and what are we prepared publicly to embrace? And so what I see, and this is, I want to say something in reference to your earlier comment, Jim, about popular opinion. What I see is a shifting body politic, a shifting American public on this, and different responses to that, and then different other responses that in turn create their own impact on public opinion. I'm trying to finish the last chapter of this book, which actually will be done this summer, dear listeners. You've heard Jim mention my Shackleton book for like 2 years, and finally there will be another book to mention, forgive me. And
about leadership, we should say.
Right, about five leaders. And I'm trying to finish the Lincoln chapter, and I'm mired in 1862 and 1863. This is when he drafted the Emancipation Proclamation and then promulgated it, made it law on January 1st, 1863. And in the year between, say, Shiloh, April 1862, about 24,000 people dead, wounded, or missing after that battle. Grant said, you could walk across the field without ever touching ground. There were so many bodies. And in between that battle and another year later, American public opinion in the North shifted dramatically on the issue of abolition and enlisting blacks in the Union Army. Mm-hmm. Dramatically. So we don't want to underestimate, even in this age of Citizens United and the buying and selling of Congress, the power of the American citizenry, Lincoln's My Fellow Citizens, and our own sense of what's right to influence institutions. We're doing it through business right now as much as through our Congress, perhaps more so. That's interesting. But this is hopeful in the context of talking about LGBT rights.
Well, it's particularly helpful because who do members, elected officials, listen to most? They don't listen to us most. They listen to major businesses.
Well,
that's a huge
thing. That's what I find. I know you're not our political analyst here, Nancy Kane, but I do find this fascinating because we were just talking earlier today about the new Republicans jumping in to the presidential race, and a lot of them are no fan of gay marriage. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. Are they just further marginalized in those states that have, you know, basically the Bible Belt, the evangelical places where evangelicals are very strong, which is not the majority of America. So it does make a lot of those candidates out of the mainstream. If you're out of the mainstream with Walmart, for goodness sakes.
Then you have another think, as we say. I think this is fascinating. I honestly believe that at some very fundamental level, what Mike Pence and the state legislature were trying to do, and this is true in Arkansas as well, were trying to test, right, new different Republican appeals to the far right. Just to your point, Marjorie, this did not work.
Yeah,
we had a wee problem, Houston, and now we have to. And now the Republican candidates have to really go back and think about this, just as they have to think about, you know, as they've had to think election after election about their position on women's role in society. So, stay tuned. This is interesting. These are interesting times, but amid the constipation at the very top of our legislative and executive branch, we have movement in the body politic and political movement indirectly through business. It's interesting. It's important.
Nancy Kane joins us every single week,
and
we're so glad she does. She's an historian at the Harvard Business School, where she holds the James E. Robeson Chair of Business Administration. Her latest book, pretty soon we're not going to talk about this because there's going to be another book, as you just point out, on leadership. But for right now, Ernest Shackleton, Exploring Leadership. Nancy, thanks for talking to us. Now, when is the new book coming out, please?
It'll be out in January.
January, okay. Ooh. Right after Christmas. Okay, coming up, we're going to ask you about the 80-hour work week. Men, are you faking it? That's a theory out there. We're going to find out if you're one of the fakers next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.